This exhibition is the first major retrospective exhibition of Dorothea Tanning. There has never been one on this scale in her lifetime or afterwards, and it brings together over 150 works of art and will give the public a great sense of the sheer volume of the work she produced, the range of media she worked in, paintings, drawings, ballet designs, soft sculptures made of cloth, hand-sewn, an installation, right through to large expressive canvases produced when she was in her 80s. She lived a very long life, right up until the age of 101. So the other thing about this exhibition is it doesn't just span her life, but in many ways the whole century. Her early works in the show are dated 1930. Her last work is 1997 in the show. So we get a wonderful cross-section of different moments of her life and of history itself, pre-war, during the war, her in exile in France, and then back in New York in the 80s and 90s. Well, because she's such a big volume of works, what we decided to do, or I decided to do as a curator, was try to get to the heart of what her work was about and what she was pursuing. And therefore, while we have 8 themes in the exhibition, which look at different moments in her career, different interests, they're brought together through the concept of the open door. And she herself writes about the door. Her first surrealist self-portrait, which sort of documented her birth as a surrealist, is called Birthday of 1942. And in it, she situates herself in a room, a space of multiple open doors. And she said the door for her was a talisman for things that were happening in her life. And therefore, we find this concept of the door recurring over and over across her career, but in terms of ballet designs, in terms of sculptures, as well as in terms of oil paintings. And so what people will discover is some of her classical surrealist works, including works like Maternity of 1947, which are very meticulously painted, not unlike the classical surrealist style of Salvador Dali, but that later they become much more balletic, soft, and informel, as we say, formless. And again, the door keeps coming back, but with different expression. The exhibition has 8 thematic rooms, and they are chronological, but also what we call diachronic, in that the themes recur across each thematic room. So there are 8 rooms, which I can recount if you like. It opens with the self-portrait, which is her works from the 1940s, and her entry into the Surrealist Circle in New York, where most of the Surrealists were in exile, thanks to World War II. It then moves to her Surrealist Circle and her relationship with Max Ernst, an older established Surrealist, whom she marries in 1946. And her first solo exhibition at the Julien Levy Gallery in New York, which really marked her as a Surrealist, because the Levy Gallery was a center point for Surrealism in the States. And that's done through the motif of the chess set and the idea of games and the fact that Surrealists came together through games and exhibitions. Then we move on to a room of the 40s and 50s, which looks at how she represents the child. And curiously, the child as a sexual creature, a creature who imagines. And they're quite disconcerting images of little girls in Victorian dresses who seem to be in a state of sleep, but who are pursuing these dark corridors and open doors. And then we move on to how she represents the family in the 1950s, and how she uses something as simple as a table and a white tablecloth to turn the domestic space into something surrealist. So the very familiar becomes very strange, and these are all from the 1950s. And then there's a change in her career, in her art, in her style, and that comes through a kind of mood of dance, of movement. And she works with Balanchine for his ballets, then we have a whole room dedicated to ballet designs, and then we see a great loosening up of her style. So these meticulous brushstrokes start becoming very expressive and fluid. And her paintings are described as prismatic or kaleidoscopic, so that they're fractured and they become bigger and bolder. And at the same time, in the 1960s and 70s, the sort of end of the exhibition brings a whole room of beautiful fabric sculptures together, where you see what she described as the three-dimensional versions of her two-dimensional paintings. And they come into life in these wonderful life-size sculptures of strange beasts and women twisting and turning. And there's a beautiful installation called Hôtel du Pavot, Chambre 202, which was produced between 1970 and 73. And it's a hotel room, but very much a surrealist space par excellence, because you have bodies coming out of the wallpaper, you have furniture morphing into sort of writhing female bodies. So this is a great surprise in the exhibition. And then it ends with a room which I've called Dionysian Desire, because it shows where she moves into these big canvases which explore naked desire, but where you have the male and female body intertwined. It's very hard to make out the sexes. There's little details like dogs, you know, a big toe, a thumb, body parts fragmented coming together in these big bucolic kind of canvases at the very end of her life and her career and the exhibition. So it ends very triumphantly with this idea that she stayed true to desire, but always kept her expression moving. So from her first works through to her late works, the body dominates Dorothy Tanning's work. But it's not your classical female body. It's very much the idea that the body is unfixed. So she's multiple identities explored, her own identity, but also the identity of the child and how that's formed, the identity of woman and rejecting notions of maternity, notions of woman as muse, those traditional objectified roles that might occur for a woman, and particularly a woman surrealist. And in her way of exploding the body and exploring desire in its many forms and refusing to have it fixed, this unfixing of the body, if you like, she really brought a whole new dimension to surrealism. And this is crucial for how we understand surrealist history, especially the move that occurs in the 1940s when women internationally, people like Leonora Carrington, Leonor Fini, Frida Kahlo, and obviously Tanning, were all coming from all parts of the globe. In the case of Tanning, from a small mid-American town of Illinois, and finding in surrealism a language with which they could master their own image and their own identity and really show that the body, sexuality, desire is permeable. It's open to interpretation, and surrealism gave them the key, if you like, to opening that door.